Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo. Thanks for downloading and listening to the show. Here's what we'll cover in this episode for the week of October 6th. .NET continues to make gains on Java. Behind Microsoft's hiring freeze rumors. A Microsoft exec heads into space again. And dangers are lurking in your hotel internet connection. We'll head to the first news bits from Redmond right after this quick musical interlude. Welcome back, and thanks for listening to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast roundup of Microsoft news and other IT happenings. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, and I'd like to thank everyone who downloads or streams this show or shares it with others. Lots of news in this episode, so let's get down to business with what came out of Redmond last week. Microsoft is revealing more about its plans for the next generation of Visual Studio Team system, codenamed Rosario, part of the now officially named Visual Studio 2010 and .NET Framework 4.0 rollout. All of these products are still in the very early stages. Said Dave Mendelin, Director of Developer Marketing at Microsoft, "We've got a name called Visual Studio 2010, and that's all about what we've got right now." The company is outlining some of the new functionality in Visual Studio Team System 2010, which consists of Team Foundation Server and the Team Suite of role-based Visual Studio clients. This next release will focus on breaking down the walls between the roles that exist today, said Mendelin. With VSTS 2010, Microsoft is addressing the need to better integrate the functions of the project lead, architect, developers, and testers throughout the application lifecycle. Key features in the 2010 Team Suite enable reuse of code assets, modeling across tools and architecture, higher quality test, and better collaboration. In related news, a new survey shows that .NET appears to be widening its lead over Java EE. Last year, a survey from development consultancy Evans Data Corporation identified a clear trend in favor of Java development, even though .NET still retained a narrow lead. 31% of developers said they plan to tap .NET as their platform of choice for SOA development, and 28% cited Java. Evans Data flagged a steep decline in the percentage of developers who expressed a preference for using .NET as a platform for their SOA activities, citing a 20% drop in just a six-month period. This year, the reverse seems to be the case. According to a new survey from Evans Data, .NET is once again outpacing Java. The survey, which polled 350 developers at enterprise shops with 1,000 or more employees, found that 60% of respondents indicated that their .NET investments were growing, and fully half said they plan to add additional .NET development personnel. Microsoft and State of Washington are waging a legal war against vendors of scareware, according to an announcement from the Washington State Attorney General's office issued last Monday. Scareware pressures the user into buying software or a service, typically via alarming pop-up messages. The latest in a flurry of lawsuits was filed last Monday by the state's AG against a Texas-based distributor, James Reed McCreary IV of The Woodlands, Texas, who's accused of sending bogus pop-up messages to PCs running Windows Messenger. The official-looking pop-up warns about a damaged or corrupted registry. Users are then directed to a website for a free scan that invariably identifies 43 critical problems that can be fixed by purchasing a copy of Registry Cleaner XP for $39. The state and Microsoft said Registry Cleaner XP is a nebulous program that does nothing but lull the consumer into a false sense of security. State Attorney General Rob McKenna called the software a blatant ripoff of consumers. The lawsuit alleges claims of misrepresentation, harassment, and high-pressure sales by the defendant. According to lead attorney Paula Sellis, senior counsel for the Washington State Attorney General's office, the state will ask the court for an injunction to shut down Alpha Red and Branch Software, Houston-based companies owned by McCreary. Amazon is conducting a private beta test of Microsoft server products running on Amazon's hosted computing platform, which is called Amazon Elastic Compute Cloud. Amazon expects to offer companies the ability to run their applications on EC2 using Windows Server or SQL Server sometime in the fall. The EC2 platform currently runs applications using various Unix-based operating systems, but Amazon said that the ability to run a Windows environment within Amazon EC2 has been one of our most requested features. The announcement added that EC2 is ideal for running ASP.NET-based websites and high-performance computing clusters. Amazon's announcement comes as Microsoft officially hints at their own internet cloud computing plans. CEO Steve Ballmer reportedly told a TechNet audience in London on October 1st that Microsoft will announce a Windows Cloud within 4 weeks' time. Such an announcement would coincide with the Professional Developers Conference, which is slated for October 27th in Los Angeles. Yahoo plans to resolve a password security vulnerability identified a few weeks ago in its Zimbra open-source email and collaboration software. Last Wednesday, a Yahoo spokesperson stated by email that the problem will be addressed in a few weeks' time. Canadian computer programmer Holden Corral spotted the security problem while participating in Yahoo's University Hack Day. He found that passwords used to log onto Yahoo's email service through the Zimbra client were exposed as clear text rather than encrypted. The Yahoo spokesperson explained that security upgrades and other changes are afoot for the next beta release of Zimbra. The security fix comes on top of news that Zimbra, which offers an Ajax-based client, has achieved compatibility with formats used in other mail programs. The product is now compatible with email, meeting apps, calendars, and contact lists used in Microsoft Exchange and Apple Mail. Rumors that Microsoft initiated a hiring freeze are not true, according to Microsoft spokesperson Lou Gelos, who denied it in accounts published last Friday. Internal Microsoft memos reportedly sparked the idea. Microsoft wasn't the only company to fend off such notions. A Yahoo spokesperson denied that the online advertising company was planning job cuts, calling it just rumor and speculation. The rumors come amidst record stock market drops. Major financial institutions such as Washington Mutual and Wachovia failed late last month, and their assets were quickly acquired by other financial institutions. Last week, President Bush signed a $700 billion Wall Street bailout bill aimed at easing bankers' jitters on loaning money to each other. The new law reportedly also includes $110 billion in tax cuts for special interest groups that come on top of the $700 billion bailout. For its part, Microsoft encouraged Congress to sign the bailout bill. Its passage was affirmed by Microsoft's Senior Vice President and Counsel Brad Smith in a statement. The credit shortage could lead to future budget cuts by CIOs, according to a former Microsoft product manager, as quoted in a Seattle PI article. The computer and software industries actually show up as some of the more positive long-term trends in employment stats published by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. To hear the BLS tell it, software publishing jobs are predicted to increase 32%, from 243,000 jobs to 321,000 jobs, that between 2006 and 2016. In that same 10-year span, jobs associated with computer systems design will increase 38%, from 1.3 million to 1.8 million. And in our final news item, Microsoft Office pioneer Charles Simony will visit space for the second time in the spring of 2009, according to Space Adventures. The planned blastoff will mark the second trip into space for the billionaire. Simony helped develop Microsoft Word and Excel. Simony will train in Russia with the Soyuz TMA-14 crew for the flight. His mission will be to rejoin the crew of the International Space Station. Details of Simony's next mission was expected to be announced in a Space Adventure teleconference on Monday. And that is news from Redmond. Up next, we have a whole host of news from the far reaches of the IT world. You're listening to Redmond Radio. Thanks once again for listening to Redmond Radio. If you enjoy listening to this program and staying informed with what's happening in IT, please pass this show around to your colleagues. Before we finish up with the rest of the podcast news, here's an update regarding what's online on the Redmond Media Group websites. Redmond Magazine in October features a piece on the choices you have if you decide to deploy or skip Vista at your company, plus a look at the final released version of SQL Server 2008. Over at Redmond Channel Partner this month, a look back at 5 years of the Microsoft Partner Program, plus best practices for starting up a central business server. Now on to the news. First, a story on what is clickjacking. Security pros are trying to make sense of a new bug found by researchers that apparently affects various browsers, including Internet Explorer. And that new threat, revealed late last week by SecTheory LLC CEO Robert Hansen and Jeremiah Grossman, is being called clickjacking, which is what happens when users are directed to malicious websites where hackers lay in wait to take control of a user's browser profile. Clickjacking, they say, gives an attacker the ability to trick a user into clicking on something only barely or momentarily noticeable, explained a warning on the homepage of the United States Computer Emergency Readiness Team. Therefore, if a user clicks on a webpage, they may actually be clicking on content from another page. The vulnerability reportedly can affect multiple browsers and even web applications such as Adobe's Flash. Browsers at risk include Internet Explorer, Mozilla Firefox, Apple Safari, Opera, and Google Chrome. A hacker doesn't need access to a trusted website to roll out a clickjack, say the researchers. It's not so much a website security issue, rather it's something that browser vendors need to fix, they say. Hansen and Grossman were slated to expound on the threat and its implications at an AppSec 2008 conference a few weeks ago, but postponed at the request of Adobe and other affected vendors, which wanted to wait until a systemic workaround or hotfix could be applied. Apple and Google have yet to comment on the threat. Mozilla released updates to its Thunderbird version 2.0.0.17 email application and Firefox 3.0.3 in an effort to address multiple vulnerabilities. The updates had numerous fixes, including some for clickjacking attempts. Experts say that NoScript, a security add-on to Firefox that blocks JavaScript execution, is designed to defend against most attack scenarios. Hansen and Grossman said last week that they plan to release their research and a proof-of-concept exploit, but won't do so until Adobe issues a patch. Microsoft, for its part, said that it's investigating the claims of possible vulnerabilities, with patches to come in the monthly cycle if needed. The Payment Card Industry Council last Wednesday released an updated version of its PCI data security standard, which is designed to help protect transmitted charge and debit card information. Opinions are mixed on what the standard called Payment Card Industry DSS 1.2 will mean for security pros going forward. However, the mandate is clear: protect data. The standard calls for enterprises to build and maintain secure networks, protect stored cardholder data, and encrypt its transmission. In addition, PCI DSS 1.2 spells out a comprehensive vulnerability management program. Steps under the program include access control testing, systems monitoring, and the implementation of documented enterprise-wide security policies. The new standard arrives as the IT compliance community contemplates several high-profile data theft cases. In reaction, a two-front enterprise information security strategy has been proposed. Such a strategy involves shoring up IT access controls and locking down data from the inside, as well as strengthening defensive measures so that hackers can't get into the network. Experts say that a beefed-up security and monitoring program can be folded into audit programs to meet both PCI compliance requirements and Sarbanes-Oxley Section 404 guidelines for general computer controls and application security. Jet-setters should be careful about how they use the internet connections supplied by hotels, as most are not secured properly, according to a new study from the Cornell University School of Hotel Administration. Hotels in the U.S. are generally ill-prepared to protect their guests from network security issues, concluded the study, titled Hotel Network Security, a study of computer networks in U.S. hotels. 147 hotels responded to a written request sent out by the researchers, asking about each hotel's network infrastructure. In addition, the researchers paid a visit to 46 hotels in person in order to surreptitiously scan their networks. The hotels surveyed ranged from family-oriented hotels to those serving more of a business clientele. What they found was that 20% of hotel networks use simple hub topologies in which every packet from every user gets broadcast to every other user. This is an unsecured network, the researchers warned. The key problem with a hub is that it simply repeats any information that's sent to it. In an ideal situation, only the transmissions that are associated with your computer would come back to you, the report states. An interloper could simply set his network card to save all the packets it sent, not merely those designated to go out to that computer's address. In addition to the wired networks, about 90% of hotels offered wireless access, which operates in a hub-like setup. The majority of other networks managed patron traffic through switches or routers, which are slightly more secure than hubs, but they still have shortcomings. Switches and routers direct internet packets only to the appropriate recipients rather than to all parties on the network. Users on such networks could still be vulnerable to man-in-the-middle attacks, though. In these scenarios, an attacker's computer broadcasts itself as the internet gateway for the hotel and intercepts all traffic going to and from the internet. In wireless environments, attackers could set up rogue hotspots which could mimic a similar spoof. In the site visits, researchers Josh Ogle deployed a laptop that ran Backtrack, a modified version of Linux for network penetration testing, as well as the Ethereal Packet Capturing Program. For wireless access, he used an SMC Networks Elite Connect wireless card. Only 6 of the 39 hotels offering wireless that researchers visited used encryption. The researchers recommend that for maximum security, hotels should set up virtual local area networks. If one were to set up VLANs on all ports in the hotel, in other words, to make every single room its own VLAN, the chances for address resolution protocol spoofing and other hacks are minimized, the report concluded. For those using hotel networks, the researchers recommended ensuring that your computer has an updated firewall and that any sensitive transaction you undertake uses the secure socket layer protocol, as evidenced by the HTTPS prefix of the web address. Use a virtual private network or SSL-based email when possible. In the survey, 20.6% of the hotels reported that malicious activity had taken place on their networks. And in the last news item, a high-performance computing network called the Worldwide LHC Computing Grid was formally introduced last week as part of an international scientific collaboration investigating particle physics, including Big Bang-type calculations. The computer grid will process an expected 15 million gigabytes of data generated annually. Researchers at CERN, a European nuclear physics body, will measure high-energy proton collisions generated in a ring-like device called a Large Hadron Collider, an underground particle accelerator located near Geneva. The WLCG, comprising more than 140 computer centers in 33 countries, will use purpose-built technologies for the project. The vast amount of data generated by the Large Hadron Collider, equivalent to filling about 3 million DVDs every year, or a stack of CDs more than 20 kilometers high, can only be handled by a grid of connected computers sharing processing power and storage, and then further distributing the information to individual users. The WLCG distributes its resources through three tiers located in 33 countries. Tier 0 is the CERN Computing Center, a central hub that provides less than 20% of the total computer capacity. Tier 1 includes sites in Canada, France, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, Nordic countries, Spain, Taipei, the UK, and two sites in the United States. And Tier 2 constitutes 140 sites in 60 federations in 33 countries that will provide around 50% of the capacity needed to process the LHC data. The Tier 2 sites will feed their data to physics institutes throughout the world, supplying both scientists and individuals. Conceived 9 years ago, the worldwide LHC computing grid will be a massively powerful and geographically distributed consumer computing resource for physics and a growing number of other disciplines. And that's it for this week's episode of Redmond Radio. I'm Michael Domingo. I'd like to thank all you listeners who continue to support Redmond Radio by streaming and downloading this program, and especially those who pass the show on to their colleagues. See you here next week.